Hi everyone, my name is Natasha Westover and welcome to Accounted International. Today I'm joined by Kat Bridges, who's an executive assistant to a CEO that I used to work for as the FD. So Kat and I worked together for about a year. Before then, Kat was part of Elavon and Orange, so she's been an executive assistant for a long time now. And today she really talks through her role, how broad it is in an organisation, how she sits on the leadership team, how she impacts and influences the strategy. She also talks about how she takes care of HR and recruitment. And I found her one of the key roles in the last position I worked at as an FD in 2017 and 2018. And so that's why I wanted to bring her to Accounted International today, to talk through our exchange of information, how I taught her a bit about finance, how she taught me a bit about the business. We go through that in great detail. And really what we're trying to say is, this is one of the key roles for me as a finance person, building up the trust with the executive assistant so that we could support each other and rely on each other. As Kat also deals with recruitment, she gives a really, really practical view on LinkedIn, CVs, covering letters, things like this. She tells you what you should do, what you shouldn't do, and we give quite a lot of examples. So once again, there's a lot of information in this one, but really nice to get to know Kat a bit better. And also she'll be coming back in future to talk through more of the recruitment side of things with us. So sit back, enjoy, and if you have any questions, any feedback, or any ideas about who we should interview in future, please drop me a line on natasha@accountedinternational.com. Thank you.
So, do you want to introduce yourself and tell us a bit about you?
Hi, I'm Kat. I'm an executive assistant. I've spent my entire career in administration support. And the reason I've done that is that I found that what drives me is being part of a successful team. I enjoy the variety that the role gives me, and the opportunities to rise to new challenges, because it's never the same one day to the next.
And I think what's really interesting about your role is that you get to see so much of the business. So I am about to ask you about your interaction with the finance team and things like that. But I always think, and whenever you guys, whenever we talk, and I've interviewed you before for a video, I love the fact that you can talk about how you get to see all of the business, and I don't think people realize that. So tell us all the juicy bits about that, Kat.
Well, that's probably one of the biggest things about my role, is that I do have eyes on a lot of confidential information. I have to take that seriously. But it also means that I'm aware of lots of things that are happening in the organisation before everyone else is. So that might be pay reviews, how that's going to look, who's affected, who's not affected, who's going to be happy, who's not going to be happy. But bringing some clarity to where that's going and fairness. But it could also be things like restructuring, where you know that nobody's really going to be happy about it, but there is a business need for it to occur. All of these things they've given me the opportunity to learn a lot more about business and where it's going, and the challenges of where you get the most reward. It might not be the easiest piece of the job, but when you work your way through it, you get the most reward out of it and feel the most proud of the work that you've done.
So let's talk about your interactions with the finance team, because we worked together for around about a year, and we obviously got to know each other quite well, which is why we're still in contact, why you're here, sharing all this great knowledge with us. But you had, from an executive assistant's point of view, and also you were responsible for the HR side of it.
Yeah.
Pretty much due to everything you covered, you had quite strong links to finance. So will you tell us a bit about that, and, you know, from your side rather than from me telling people what it's like working with an executive assistant from you?
So from an EA point of view, a relationship with finance is key, especially when you're supporting a CEO or even a commercial director, someone like that. You need to understand how finance works, what their processes are, even if you don't understand the numbers they're generating, but the processes they're following, so that you can give them the heads up of what they would see as a red flag. Whatever your boss is doing, because he might not be following process, and it's quite unlikely a CEO is going to be following process, he will want something to happen, and as an EA, you need to help make it happen. You're the one that needs to pick up if he's placing an order for something, has a PO been raised? The approval part is sort of by the by, but are finance aware? Can they keep up? Can you make sure that that gap is plugged? And I'm a bit cheeky in that sense. In lots of my roles, I don't necessarily follow process. But as long as you make sure the right people have the right information, it's not a big issue. And you might be able to pick up on things that are far more to the point, or that might not be passed to finance ordinarily. So say the suggestion that somebody gets a bonus, an off-the-cuff remark or an agreement in a meeting, and say you haven't been in the meeting, you're not aware, so you've not got any record. And just making sure that it's followed through, so that when we're doing forecasts, it's all picked up and put together.
Yeah. I'm so glad you used those two examples, because I think on the first one, it wasn't actually just whoever your boss is, so whoever you're supporting, in this case, it's the CEO. It was, I saw you doing that, whoever you were talking to, be it like someone on the leadership team or one of the managers, you're like, I need to get this ordered. I need to get a new whiteboard to go up here. I need to, and you're like, you need a PO. You need to do this. Like, you would literally walk through the office. It's like bang, 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 bang. You were like, I think it's important to let finance people know, especially when they're new to finance and they're new to working in businesses. It's a new environment, that someone like you can really be a massive support to finance. Not only on like what you were talking about, sort of how to spend money and get things done, how that process and things like that work, I think you were like a second layer of finance there, helping to educate people, because so much of it came through you. But also just can't remember the second thing you said actually, Kat, what was it?
About keeping you aware of things that are going on, the finance team, not just you, but the finance team, about decisions that are made that might impact you, that might have a cash impact or a forecasting impact.
Yeah, I know. I would say you might hate this description, but I would say you were like our super messenger. So you just be like, oh, I was in a meeting and I heard this. Has anyone spoken to you about that? And I'm like, no, and you're exactly right. It's got to go on the cost forecast. It's got to go the cash forecast. And as soon as you know all of that sort of information, it makes your forecasting better. Yeah. So that's another reason why I think it's such a great link between a finance team and an executive assistant in a business. It really helps us. And then I could see how we could help you at times. But I know for sure that you've spent quite a lot of time helping different departments and different individuals, depending on what their workload is. You've spent a lot of time getting your head around recruitment, how the whole thing works, but also about screening CVs, looking on LinkedIn. And I think some of that information might be quite useful for our finance professionals who are listening in, as to what someone like you, who's maybe screening stuff online all the time, what maybe some of the good things are that you've seen with CVs and the way people present themselves either online or in person, and then maybe some of the red flags, things that you obviously are allowed to share with us. Nothing, no dodgy red flags. That's quite a big question. But
thankfully, I've never seen any really, really dodgy red flags. Just some really strange or slightly different ways of saying things. So one of the funnier things I've seen is somebody put in months, the number of months experience they had of working in a specific skill. And it went into years. So it was very bizarre that it was listed in months. It was like 56 months or something like that. As a finance professional, I'm sure people will be using correct numbers and and tailoring them to the people that are going to be reading them.
Well, making it easy for your audience to understand it. Because if someone's saying, oh, I was doing that for 60 odd months or something, then it's like, wait, how many years is that?
Yeah.
I mean, you've just added some admin to someone and like doing some mental arithmetic. So make it easy for people to understand how great you are on paper and on LinkedIn before they meet you.
Totally. Someone also said that they were like Times Personality of the Year or something really bizarre. Yeah, just don't lie. Don't make up stuff that makes people go and look into you more. It's unnecessary. Keep it professional. Have a professional profile out there that is factual and accurate. If all that is a list of jobs and dates, that's great. It doesn't need to be any more than that really on LinkedIn. But more importantly, choose a professional picture. Don't have a photo of you with a drink in hand on holiday. Have something that conveys how professional you can be in the workplace. Smile, be nice, look like you know you're a nice person to work with. It's not about not showing any personality, but just showing that you know the difference between work and personal is huge. And look at what the business wants. So for us, it's specific skills. But I've worked in businesses before where CV screening was all about showing that you had staying power. So if you were somebody who had a job every year and you were changing regularly, that was the CV didn't even get read because you didn't show commitment anywhere. But that depends on industry and companies. So have a look at those places and target the right sort of places, and also know why you want to work somewhere. Making a decision now about the type of industry you want to work in won't impact you later on if you want to change. As long as you know why you want to change and what's interesting and new about moving on, because you can talk about that. And once you can say, look, I understand that you might be looking for someone who has experience in X industry. However, I think I bring this to the table. Highlight it. Don't just leave it out there for someone to go, oh, actually, no. Make sure you're a step ahead, especially if you're changing career path or industry.
Yeah, I think if you're changing career path or industry, and you feel people are going to ask questions about it,
yeah,
I would say, I think what you were saying was don't wait to be asked questions.
No.
Figure out how you're framing that so you can own the conversation.
Yeah. If there's something like that, do a cover letter, do a cover email. Don't apply just through the process if it doesn't allow you to do that. Look for the careers mailbox or the talent acquisition team email address and email them directly. You'd be surprised how few applications come in with a cover letter. Even by having one, you will stand out from the crowd.
Okay, that's really...
Especially in small business.
And you also said about looking at... So you were talking about if a company wants stay in power, then... Maybe if you're someone who's moved around a lot, you're probably not going to be a good match anyway.
No.
But maybe if you've identified the sort of company you want to work for or the industry you want to work in, have a look at what is generally accepted as the norm in that company or industry, and then re-engineer it back from there and go, yeah. Okay, people seem to do this, whether you like it or not, that's what that company or that industry is actually used to, and people find comfort in that.
Yeah.
They'll look for that time and time again. So if you're looking and they're going, it seems like their finance people have been, prior to going to that company, they had like 3-year stints everywhere else. They seem to value that. You know what you've got to do. So pick out where it is you want to be, where you want to end up, and then go, well, what does that look like? What sort of people do they pick? Where have they been? What have they been working on? And then re-engineer it back and start working on that now.
Yeah.
I think that's the what you just said, but flipped around as to like, what can I do today? But I think it's really good advice. So, people don't really think about cover letters, and they don't value them as much as you used to hear about them when I started working 20 years ago.
And I think especially with finance, if you're listing out your qualifications and your experience, and it's very process and task orientated, having something that stands you out from the crowd is going to help. Something that can show a bit of personality and the way that you think, especially as you're entering the profession and in those junior years of your career.
Yeah, for sure. But I think it comes back to what you were saying. Think about how you display that, because there's still a really constructive way you can display things like that on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Without it being like the two major things I get when I interview finance people is I want to eventually work on strategy, but then they don't really, they haven't thought it through. They don't know what that word really means. And I think you described it really well, especially at the start of this interview, where you were saying it's actually the example you gave about the HR and recruitment strategy, it's a lot of little things that you tweak and you adjust that create this strategy. So the strategy is like this great big one liner, and then there's like a million little things underneath it that we all have to work on to make that strategy happen. And I feel when I interview people, they want to work on the one liner. And I'm like, that's not a job. That is not how you fill your time. And the other thing they say is, especially, you know, most of my recruitment has been in England, like in the UK. And people, young people tend to say here, I like socializing. And I'm like,
who doesn't?
Yeah, that doesn't really give me an insight into who you are. And how do you display that on LinkedIn?
Yeah.
So I think at the bottom of my LinkedIn, or definitely the bottom of my CV, I have maybe 3 or 4 lines. It's not that much, but it does show people that I like diving, windsurfing, like I'm a water baby, and I like charitable stuff. And I like doing a bit of charity, and I like doing a bit of traveling. There's like 3 things that I, by and large, that's what I spend my time on outside of work. And it's such a small little paragraph, but it's not like I like socializing.
Socializing, drinking, reading, and travel are probably the things that appear the most and say the least about someone. Because it has no context.
Yeah.
Unless it's they're really, really interested in, say, they read all about military history, or and then you narrow it down, it gives you a bit more personality. Don't just say, oh yeah, I like traveling. Well, how does that tell me anything? Who doesn't like going away for a bit of sun or a bit of, you know, whatever that is, skiing? But be a bit more narrow and definitive about what that means to you.
Yeah, so as an example, I'll use myself as an example. So on traveling, though, I've put climbing Kilimanjaro.
Yeah.
And I think I've put running the New York Marathon. So I quite like to travel, but have a purpose for traveling sometimes. Yeah. Other times, I too just want a bit of sun. But that shows people that I've got enough discipline to do those kind of things.
Exactly.
And I've got some like mental strength to get through a marathon, even when it's clear I'm not a professional runner.
And that links back really well to the rest of the CV. You've spoken there about achievements. Mm-hmm. So make sure your achievements are in there. If you've worked in the past and you've been recognized internally with an award, or you've worked through, say, a company acquisition and you've helped bring those books together, it doesn't mean that you necessarily were in charge of it, but if you've contributed to something that is a huge challenge and it was new to you, put it on there as an achievement. Pull it out. Don't just say, yeah, I've worked on P&Ls and I've worked on this and I've worked on that. Be specific about how some things that were new to you and were a challenge, and it gives you items that will come up in interview, you can refer back to, and it makes you a real person in a real situation. It's not just a list of, oh yeah, I've done POs and I've made payments and I've, well, that's great and it's really important they're done well, but how did that impact? How was that recognized? What have you done? Were you recognized for improving a process or reducing costs?
Yeah, and I think the example you just gave, especially for finance people, is quite an interesting one. So even if you felt you weren't heavily involved in an acquisition or something like that, I've definitely interviewed someone and they named a company. And I was like, wait, you were there from this year to this year. Yeah. Wait, so you were there through the acquisition of this. I had to work it all out. And they went, yeah. And I was like, so how was that? And they were talking about what they were working on. And yeah, they did a bit of work, but it wasn't on their CV. And what I drew from the conversation, just because I happened to know something about that company, was when we started talking, it wasn't really about the work they did towards that acquisition. It was about they took on more work outside of their regular work. So they started working longer hours and they were able to do that for a set time while they were going through the acquisition. That shows great character in a finance person, that you're like, okay, so when we go through something like this, I think I can rely on you.
Yeah.
And also then we started talking about, so what was the feel of it like in the office? Because it can be a scary time when a company's acquiring or getting acquired or whatever. And this person started talking about, you know, the change in culture that happened, but also how they felt apprehensive, they were unsure. So wait, it's gone from you put in just your regular day job on your CV to then us pulling out all these things you did, and the fact that you felt apprehensive, you didn't know if you were going to have a job at the end of it, you didn't even know if you would want to stay there given the new culture and things like that, yet you still worked really hard, you took on extra work, and you stuck through it to see what it would be like on the other side and to see if it was right for you. And had I not interviewed that person and known something about their CV, about that company, I wouldn't have got all these other things. And practically none of that is them telling me I did some technical accounting that was really, really amazing.
Yeah.
So thanks, make it easy for your audience. And I think when you're going through something like that, you don't think about some of those things that you could point out to your next employer and say, well, do you know what? When people started leaving, I stayed and I worked at it. And then I made a decision about whether I wanted to stay there or not, given the new environment. that's really powerful. Is you must see that all the time with these softer skills and this almost like this secondary set of information you get from a LinkedIn profile or something like that.
Hugely. I know it's very difficult to sell yourself. A lot of people find it hugely awkward. One, to write it down, and two, to sit there and talk about it and in a glowing positive way. You talked about Brits especially there and recruiting in the UK. We're so shy about it, or find it a bit rude to be boastful about our achievements, and then we feel uncomfortable doing it. So I suppose one of my big things that I'm really proud that I've worked on in this role is when we have candidates come in, greeting them and putting their mind at rest, giving them a welcome so that they are best set up to walk into that room, that they're not walking into a room where people are up against them. We want to be talking to people that are going to succeed. You need to be calm and relaxed to do that. Everyone feels nerves, but just embrace that process, because the more you talk about yourself and the more self-aware you are, the more you can gauge if it's the right situation for you, because you know what you want out of a role. You know what kind of company you want to work in, what environment works best for you, and the people you want to surround yourself with.
Yeah, and actually on that note, I think you're going to come back and work with us a bit more on helping to set the scene of going to an interview and going through the process of getting recruited. I'm sure you've agreed to that in the past, Kat.
We've talked about lots of different ideas, so I'm more than happy to share.
But I think it is, I always say to people, if someone's interviewing you, they are rooting for you because they want you to be the one so that they can stop interviewing and get back to their job. They
really do.
They don't want to spend, no one wants their job to just be recruiting for this gap that they've got in their department, no matter how that gap's come about, through growth, so it's a new role, or someone's left and they've got a gap.
Yeah.
No one, if you've got a gap, no one wants to spend their time recruiting. They just want that person. So they're rooting every time you walk through that door. And I think I definitely didn't feel like that when I was younger. I feel like that a lot more now, but not when I was younger.
I think there is a thing that we all have, that building that self-confidence to understand the value that you bring to the table. And that's everyone in an organization. The role is being advertised, or you are sat there receiving a salary because there is value to that position existing. Well, how are you bringing the value? What is your standout thing? And like we were just talking about those situations where someone's been through an acquisition or a merger. You've lived that. You've breathed that. You're used to those pressures, and you know what makes you comfortable or uncomfortable, and you're willing to challenge it or sit tight and see how it plays out. That says a great deal about an individual.
It really does. And I think I definitely used to overlook that on my CV and with my experience and go, oh well, it just happened, so you know, what are you going to do? You just get on with it.
But it doesn't just happen. Nothing just happens. And I think that's probably the other really huge thing, especially in finance, where there's a very clear progression path, is where do you want to go? What is your next step? How do you want to get there? What do you want to learn? Because you know better than anyone where your personal strengths are and which bit of the puzzle is the next on that path to you getting to that high level strategy game playing. It's be more self-aware and don't worry about being critical. I think the biggest thing I've ever learned in my career is that everyone has nerves. Everyone has fears. And I was very fortunate. So probably one of the things that I'm most would say to people is take the opportunities, take opportunities wherever they come from, because you don't know who you're going to meet and to have the conversation that might set you on the next path. But also put yourself out there. You know, you don't know how to do everything. Nobody knows how to do everything. So if you want to learn something new, say. If you want the opportunity to do something, ask. It might not be granted, but people will keep an eye out, and they'll also realize that you're willing to learn. Being willing to learn and having enough confidence to be self-aware and say it, they're two huge skills that people look for, and that they can't be underrated.
Self-awareness is it's a real tough one, because some people just have it and some people don't, and they need a lot of help to get it. And it was, you know, the reason why I've picked up on that is because it's one of the reasons why we started this business, to help people understand not only the type of accountant they want to be, but how they do the work, how they want to do it, what they want to do at work. And if you look on my profile on LinkedIn, it doesn't, the biggest thing it tells you is how I do my finance work, what kind of finance person you're getting. It's not about all the acquisitions or stuff I've been involved in. That's what it doesn't tell you. It's like, that's, that comes a bit later. It's like, actually, if you just read my profile and you think this might be the type of person you want around, because it's a lot about finding the right individuals to fit into the culture, then you can go and see if I've got all the technical stuff and the right experience that you're looking for. But I definitely needed help framing that. And that's why we've started these podcasts and we've started these conversations, to try and help people go, yeah, be self-aware, but start by looking at how you do things, and start by looking at like other people's LinkedIn profiles and what you like about them. Because I think LinkedIn profiles are like weddings. You go to someone's wedding and you sit there, whether you like it or not, and go, I like that. Didn't really like that bit. And after you've been to a few weddings, you really have something to compare it to. And you're like, oh, I would take this bit from this wedding, and this bit from this wedding. It's just one of those things. You can't help yourself.
Yeah.
And that's what I would suggest people do on LinkedIn, is go and look at people's profiles and just read them and go, that bit worked really well. How can I do my version of that and put my stamp and my personality on it?
And that goes for everything. In work, is don't reinvent the wheel. go and mimic something else. Ask for someone for a template. Find a way that, you know, don't do 100% of the work yourself if you don't need to.
Exactly. There's lots of shortcuts out there.
Yeah.
So when you were talking about the professional LinkedIn profile, I would say, especially to women, don't have your wedding photo on there.
Well, or no.
Don't have the picture of your newborn baby.
No, no children.
Yeah, okay.
No wedding photos. And not that Facebook bright red lipstick, pouty face selfie.
Unless you think that's a good requirement for your role.
Exactly. And as a finance professional, probably not. But have a professional face. And I suppose the thing is, with the CV and with LinkedIn profiles, get someone else to look at it. Don't just trust your own judgment, because they'll say to you, don't do that. Don't assume.
Yeah, and I always say to people, I guess I say this to women more than men, because I think at a certain point in a woman's career, employers start thinking, okay, she's probably going to get married, she's probably going to start a family. If we employ her now, we'll probably have to pay for maternity leave, blah, 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 blah. So I always say, if you've got your personal email address on there, don't have your year of birth as part of your email address.
No.
Like, take out anything that might give them a clue as to at what stage you are in your life, and let them just judge you on you, your experience, yeah, and what you're showing them and how you come across in the interview. Because people project their stuff onto you, whether you like it or not, when they're recruiting. Totally. That's what we all do. It's just human nature.
Totally. Remove the opportunity for them to do that.
Yeah.
It's so depressing when you realize just how many things are assumed about you because of your age or the fact you're a woman, or, you know, leave them guessing. Do you have kids? Don't you have kids? It's none of their business.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think people don't realize, but, you know, you and I have been on leadership teams now for a few years. They don't realize how much at the top table we talk about people and what's going on with people. And yeah, most of it is how do we support people?
Yeah.
But some of it is, okay, we've got someone new coming in. What do we know about them? Like, and when they say how old their kids are or whatever, when they offer stuff to us, we're like, so how's that going to work? They live 20 miles away. How are they going to do the school run? How is it going? And then it raises all those questions.
And sadly, that is the question that is asked about women. It's not, hey, that bloke has two kids that are school age. And that's sad. Don't leave yourself open to those things. There's no need for it. We're protected in law, but make them hire you for your abilities and your personality and what you bring and that value you're going to add, not give them reasons why they might make questions.
Yeah, and I think, to be fair, there's people talk about their kids in interviews and stuff like that because they're so proud, and actually they could have both sets of grandparents, next door neighbors, it's all sorted.
Yeah,
but that bit of information wasn't offered in the interview, and so people need to know that it is discussed, like, how is it practically going to work. And a lot of it is from a really supportive point of view of, we don't want to put anyone in a situation where there's so much pressure on them. That's not where we want to go with people.
Yeah.
So I think people have to be careful about even the small personal things they think they're sharing that are okay to share. Just think about where those questions might lead. And yeah, we've picked women and kids and stuff like that, but it's all sorts of things of, you know, saying that, well, I have 10 holidays a year. Well, how's that going to work on our annual leave? It's, you know, it's all these little things that I go abroad once a month to do, you know, some cycling with the cycling club or something. You're just like, how are you going to make your 20 days of annual leave stretch over all of that?
So there's all that socializing thing that you've put at the bottom of your CV, which might just be read as, I really like going out drinking at weekends.
Yeah, I would say, do you know what? And all the time I've interviewed people, which is a lot now, there's only one person I questioned who said, who talked about it in a really, really constructive manner and said, by socializing, I mean, my friends and I, we pick a different restaurant every month. And we do this thing where we go to a restaurant, we give it marks out of 10. It was like a thing that they did. That's why it was on there. And I even fed back at the time and said,
you need to make more of that.
Yeah, you're actually doing yourself a disservice by just calling it socializing. Let's right now in this interview, think about other language we can put around it. Because I would hate you to be off the list, because socializing, people think, all right, they're always going to come in with a hangover then.
Yeah.
I think that's really practical information you've given us, Kat. So before I say thank you for your time, I always ask this question, and I'm going to ask you, what would you do if you could go back in time and give your younger self some career advice? What would be the one bit of career advice that you would have loved to have heard?
One bit of career advice I would give myself is to stop being scared, to stop worrying so much about everyone else and what they're doing and what they might think of you. Just be the self you want to be and really look at it. I had a very great opportunity when I was in my early 30s to take part in a management development course with the team that I was supporting at the time. And one of the things we had to do was do some stand-up comedy, some ad-lib comedy as a show. And I had got up that morning, I'd had a really rough time with my self-confidence, and I decided that whatever I did that day, whatever was asked of me, I was going to try it, because what could really go wrong? And it was awkward, and it wasn't, you know, I wasn't in my comfort zone, but I did it, and I didn't, you know, the worst thing ever didn't happen. Nobody like laughed in my face when they weren't supposed to. They weren't laughing at me making a fool of myself. They were laughing at me because I was funny. And I think when you can move on from some of those hang-ups, you can really focus on what makes you tick and gives you the opportunity to be the best version of you. And that has made the biggest change for my fulfillment at work.
Yeah. I think you've put it perfectly there. It's about living your most authentic version of you at work, yeah. Isn't it? About having the confidence to do that. So I think that's perfect advice. Thank you so much for your time. I know you're busy, and I also know that we'll see you very soon here at Accounted International. So thanks, Kat.
Thanks for having me.